Hello and welcome to Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up, Kid Sister swings by to talk about fusing hip-hop with the sounds of Chicago dance clubs.
You'll never really hear a BPM go lower than like 110, 115. Super fast, super frenetic.
Peppa, from influential all-girl rap group Salt and Pepper, discusses overcoming prejudice and tells us what's wrong with female rap today.
You know, a lot of women think that they have to bear all and, you know, go too deep to be heard, which I don't think that's the case, because I think it's a balance.
And as Radio 1's Essential Mix celebrates the 500th DJ to do a mix for them, Pete Tong tells us about the reasons for the show's success.
Anything that can be left on the radio for that long, if it's quality and it keeps getting revered in its core kind of audience, you know, after 10 years, there is a feeling of, you know, it becomes a little bit legendary.
That's all in Music Weekly. It's the one and only Rosie Swash.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I've got some news for you. My driving instructor is stuck in Spain until further notice.
That's what he told you.
So, you know, no driving lessons update, I'm afraid.
Oh, you know, well, I mean,
Volcanic Ash is ruining my...
That sound you can hear is loads of people pressing quit on their computer when you said no driving instructor update today. It's over.
I'm sorry, guys.
Anybody still here? I can welcome back to Guardian Towers music journalist Emma Warren.
Hello there.
Are you well, Emma?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually, and very happy to be here.
Excellent. We're happy to have you. Emma, you are our go-to girl, our one-stop shop for all things urban and related, musically, which is just as well, as we have... there's a bit of a female rapper theme in today's show.
Certainly is.
Anyway, first up, we've got an interview with a feisty Chicago rapper, Kid Sister, who first came to our attention a couple of years ago when Kanye West appeared on her single Pronailed. Her debut album, Ultraviolet, features collaborations with dubstepper Rusko, ghetto bassman Hervé, and I don't know whether he's called Exchange, Triple Exchange, XXXchange from Spankrock.
I've heard him called all sorts of different things, so I think it's one of those ones where, unless you're his mate, you just call him what you want.
I'm going to go with Triple Exchange, because that sounds fantastic, and it also sounds like a bureau de change. Triple Exchange.
Ka-ching.
Yeah, from Spankrock. Ka-ching. It's clearly a record aimed very much at the dance floor, Ultraviolet. We're going to hear Rosie's interview with Kid Sister shortly, but first, here's the aforementioned Pronails. Shake it up, rock your body, make it knock knock when you're partying. Take a break in the audience. Do your footwork, break a sign again. I'm looking sharp, you can't compete with a champ. Steady flicking, I'm holding down that leg, you're right, red. Hey, brownstones all in their face, gold charms and paper chase. Talk smack from around the way, gotta put these chicken ears in their place. I ain't rocking no stupid bass, I ain't tripping, I juke all day. I ain't slipping, cause either way, when I hit the block, all the people.
I don't think that Pronails is that representative of the album. It seems like it kind of stands out a little bit.
A little different, I guess. I mean, all of them are varying. The only thing that I think is the same about most of them is the tempo. But I think the influences are drawn from all the kind of genres that I like and speak to me. So, you know, you have dubstep there, and you have... you know, kind of flamboyantly gay house music with You Ain't Really Down. I mean, who doesn't love like a nice gay club every now and then? I know I do. So then there's, and you know, you have like Pronails, which is a little more on the hip-hop side, but still dancey.
You're definitely a bunch of an album, it feels like, that's been made for live performance.
For
live,
yeah, for show. Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely my strong suit. I think I'm a performer first and foremost, and then, you know, the writing is cool and everything, but I really love to perform. So if you hear the album, you'll never really hear a BPM go lower than, like, say, 110, 115. Super fast, super frenetic. Or Lisa, Angie, Pam, Renee, or nobody if you ain't trying to stay poor. Everybody, that's what I came for. My brother was throwing these parties in Chicago called Get Out of the Hood. And I just got up on stage one day and MTV was there and it just seemed to all snowball and fall into my lap. I was never one of those people that was like, can't wait to quit my job, man. I need to like make this my career, man. And everyone, I mean, it's like so, you see that in hip-hop all the time. Even not in hip-hop, even in like these indie kids in Brooklyn, they're like, man, I'm so sick of my job. I just want to quit and do this full time. I'm like, shoot, I am never too good to make money. I will work at my job until I cannot work at my job. And that was what it was. I was getting called off to do things and having to say, sorry, guys, I can't work again. And they were getting pissed. And I'm like, all right, cool. Well, why don't we just, like, take it easy for a second? But it was never like, yes, I can't wait to quit. You know, I was like, I will make money and make my bills because that feels good.
One of the tracks on the album that I really, really like is Step, which you recorded with Estelle.
Yeah, Estelle. It's a very British track.
Yeah, so tell me about working with those two, how you met them, how it all came together.
I met Estelle on BBM Voice Note. Alain was, or A-Track was talking to her, and he's like, someone wants to say hi to you. And she was like, it was all, hello. And I was like, who is this crazy person? He's like, that's Estelle. And we also, I think we ran into each other. We were on MTV Ladies Week or something like that, like a year and a half ago or so. And then Resco, I just met him at Winter Music Conference last year for the first time. We never met before. We worked together. But I think it's just great that we did come together, because I think it's a really sweet track.
That was Melissa Young, a.k.a. Kid Sister, talking with Rosie there. That sounds pretty interesting, doesn't it? It sounds pretty interesting to me. And the record, not your interview, obviously.
Obviously not the interview. I guess what she said there about it not going lower than... Did she say 110?
110, 115.
110, 115. It reminds me of a little bit of what Khalees is doing now, in that she has completely abandoned her sort of pop R&B roots and has gone full throttle for the Euro.
Yeah.
For the Euro trance. Where, you know, I don't know how fashionable a move that is, but they both seem to have adopted more of a dance floor stance.
It's interesting, Emma, to hear a hip-hop artist sort of dabbling in other, and in particularly in British music forms, because, you know, there does seem to be a degree of, not snobbery exactly, but American artists very seldom made, you know what I mean? They didn't really make, like, drum and bass tracks. I mean, the Jungle Brothers did, but you know what I mean? Not, that didn't really happen very often. It's not like there's been a sort of vast sense that Grimes influenced US rap. You know, it's a bit of a law unto itself. Is that what I'm fair to say?
I think the days of the kind of idea that American rap's over here and UK hip-hop or UK street music is somewhere far away from it is all over, actually.
Really?
I think there's a lot more interaction between all those different scenes.
That's interesting.
You can see that with Kid Sister, definitely, because she's got Rusko, she's got... I mean, she comes from a kind of more alternative hip-hop background anyway, because her boyfriend was A-Track. Is A-Track? I don't know their relationship status, but I guess that's irrelevant. So she comes from that sort of slightly alternative side anyway, so you might assume that she's a bit more musically open-minded. But there's definitely a sense of people being open all across the board to music that's coming from different places. What you have got, though, I think, is a real sense of the local. So you've got that kind of UK local dubstep flavour with Rusko. You've also got that local Duke flavour from Chicago, which is the kind of indigenous kind of like Chicago house style.
Right.
Which is also interesting because there's a big record on the kind of UK post-dubstep dance floors called Foot Crab, which is also Duke influenced.
So, yeah, she's sort of a bit of a dynasty. She comes from a bit of a kind of musical dynasty in that she goes out with A-Track, and her big brother is Flostradamus. Who's Flostradamus?
I like Flostradamus' stuff, actually. I'd say it's a little bit more in the sort of cleaner version of spank rock.
Right, okay.
Hip-hop. I quite like it. What do you think, Emma?
The one thing I would like to say about Kid Sister, actually, to swerve the question about Flostradamus even, is that I had a really funny thing on the Radio 1 review show the other night. She was on it, and they were talking about kind of where people were coming from, and she described herself as a crate digger, which sent the presenter in a total spin because he misheard what she said.
Oh, right.
And started apologising hugely to anyone that was offended by the use of the N-word. And she was
Sitting here like a maid now going,
oh my God, that's not what I said. but she kind of recovered very quickly and professionally and carried on as though nothing had happened, which I thought was really cool. And I liked her already, but that also made me laugh a lot, and she went up in my estimation as well.
That degree of professionalism will stand Kid Sister in good stead when her album comes. Well, her album's out now. I think it sounds, that's a lot of stuff on that. You could imagine it being played on Radio 1 as well, which is not necessarily true for Spank Rock and things like that.
Okay.
So could well be a hit, Kid Sister. Out now, as is her new single, Daydreaming. Let's stay with female rap, shall we? From the new school to the old school. Back in the mid-80s, when hip-hop was beginning to enter the charts, the male dominance of Run-DMC, LL Cool J and Eric B and Rakim was broken up by all-female groups Salt-N-Pepa from Queens, New York. Since first single Showstopper hit the airwaves in 1985, Salt-N-Pepa have had multiple platinum success with their albums and sold 15 million. 15 million, that's quite a lot of records worldwide. Rosie, you spoke to Pepper about the early days, and I believe she was a bit of a hero of yours.
She's a huge, and, you know, Salt and Pepper and Spinderella, all heroes.
Cut it up like this.
The group split up in 2002, by which time I was no longer in the throes of my fandom of them. Salt left rather abruptly when they were doing very well, because actually their most successful album commercially was Very Necessary, which was out in 1993.
Was that the one with Let's Talk About Sex on it?
No, that was the one with What a Man.
What a Man, What a Man, What a Man. That's how it went, just in case you didn't.
And the reasons for Salt's departure are never entirely clear, but it seemed that she found the whole pressure of stardom quite difficult. But if you read other reports, she sort of found God. She felt, you know, the Salt-N-Pepa material didn't align with her newfound beliefs. So that all sort of happened, and they imploded. I think Pepper has since had a reality TV show on VH1, who hasn't, in America. And they got back together for Block Weekender, which was a few weekends ago, and they played over here in the UK. And so I got a chance to speak to Pepper then, and I asked her if she experienced any prejudice when Salt-N-Pepa first started and whether she felt it was harder for a woman to make it as an MC.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, it has always been a male-dominated field, and, you know, a lot of the male artists thought we were maybe a one-hit wonder or, you know, a fly-by-night. And when they saw we were sticking around and, you know, we're like, wait a minute, these girls are, you know, hit after hit. Some embraced, but some didn't, because, you know, they used to do a lot of songs that they had collaborations on that you would think Salt-N-Pepa would make the collaboration, and they didn't ask us. So I would be like, I used to go, okay, they're hating on us. They don't want to put us in their songs. Especially when we started getting really popular, because popular means back then crossover. And at that time, if you wasn't so street or underground, you were considered pop. And then we really started feeling, you know, like some animosity against us. They're like, oh, those girls are crossover. And like, opposed to today, everybody wants to be crossover. Everybody wants, and crossover just means popular music.
And it means selling records.
So. It means selling records, right.
Are you ready to rock? Rock, y'all, until the beat, y'all. I keep on, and you don't stop. Rocking on, keep rocking on. I'm the queen on the mic, and it's true when I say that the Pepper MC is here to stay. And you know, if I was a book, I would tell. So let me curve on my body, got a story to tell.
Do you think that what you were coming up against was one of the reasons that you were such an assertive, your rhymes were so assertive, and the things that you were talking about were quite almost quite controversial, or definitely not something that you were used to hearing young women talk about at that time? Or did you always know that you wanted to kind of tackle these things?
You know, as a team with Herbie and ourselves, you know, we just knew, we just stayed focused, and we just did what music and, you know, that we like, that we honestly like, and we dress the way we like to get dressed, because a lot of the females who come in, they felt that they had to be harder than the guys and dress hard and dress like guys. And I think with us being different and saying, look, we're girls, let's dress like girls. And we kept that, you know, our feminine side, and still, you know, was edgy and tackled these subjects that, like you say, yeah, that women weren't really addressing and only men were talking about. And we were like, we're going to talk about sex too.
Salt-N-Pepa's here, we're in effect. One, two, two, push it back. Who invited
time that I heard a Salt and Pepper record sort of coincided with the point in my adolescence where I was just becoming aware of music for the first time, you know, not, you know, picking it for myself and being interested. And I just totally fell in love with Salt and Pepper. I think I was... And then after you guys, we had, you know, En Vogue were around at the time as well. After you guys, we had TLC. And I was so into all those groups. And looking back on them now, it strikes me that these were, you know, groups of women who were very self-confident and who were very sure of what they were talking about and were putting across their point of view that was very uncompromising. And sometimes I worry that that's missing from pop music today.
I think so. You know, the way it went, I mean, it's very edgy now. Some parts of it is really over the top. You know, and a lot of women think that they have to bear all and, you know, go too deep to be heard, which I don't think that's the case, because I think it's a balance. You know, your music has to have a balance. And like with Salt and Pepper, we always felt a sense of responsibility to our audience. I mean, we have all age groups, so we try to balance it, you know, in our music and what we give back. And, you know, our music has been uplifting. Even the new music that we're working on, we're going to always try to empower women. And I can't wait till it just gets all finished and get out, you know, because I definitely think it's some room for us, you know, because it is missing. I think it is. I mean, there are some fun MCs out there like your Missy Elliott. I mean, I love her. That's my girl, you know, and she just brings, like, that fun side. But, you know, there are some messages not being said in music now from a woman's point of view.
Yeah, so you probably know better than I do about, you know, female rappers at the moment, but I would have said myself that Missy Elliott was the last example of some a female MC coming through and doing something completely off her own back, very original, very uncompromising. You know, MCs like Nicki Minaj and stuff.
I knew you were going to say that.
Completely other end of the spectrum, and I guess
that's the new Little Kim to me. So.
Right, exactly. So I wasn't going to say her name either, but it's the same thing of I get you're a mother of a daughter. I think she's probably beyond the point now where she would be totally influenced by that kind of thing. But
exactly.
Do you ever worry that young women like yourselves grow up in the life that you grew up and are being given the wrong messages by these kind of,
you know,
of
yeah, you know, you try to do your part and monitor it. I thank God with my daughter, I do. See, Nicki Minaj is young, so for her to probably try to set an example right now, she has not gone through anything. She's just trying to be heard and be a celebrity, and I'm sure she got people around her saying, hey, this is going to get you far. You know, she's probably surrounded by that, you know, team. And, you know, she's a baby herself to me. That's why I feel there's a sense of responsibility for artists like myself to, whenever we have the platform to give something back, to try to say something, to keep pushing on, like, empowerment and positive, and other artists should when they get that moment or that chance to. Because we can't just rely on the Nicki Minaj to allow to dictate that to our little girls.
Me in the right spot. See all the guys that I've had. They try to play all that Mac. It's but every time they tried, I said, that's not it.
Sandra Pepper Denton there with Rosie. Rosie in awe. Audibly in awe of being... having a conversation with Pepper from Salt and Pepper. She sounded great.
She was fantastic. We talked for a very long time. And also, I will say that interview was a while ago, so it wasn't off the back of the Nicki Minaj conversation we had last week. Otherwise,
about Nicki Minaj later.
I know. It sounds like I've massively got it in for her, but I haven't. I absolutely adored Salt and Pepper. And what she said at the beginning of that interview, I think, was the point about them getting a lot of stick for being crossover.
Yeah.
You know, of course they were, because I was I guess I was 9 or 10 or something, you know, in London, white girl in London who was totally consumed by this music. And their cover of Twist and Shout, which is pretty special still, was the first record I ever had. And I remember begging my dad to go and buy it for me, please, please, please. Wow. And actually having it on vinyl and listening to it over and over again. And you don't get that, you know, you didn't get that much with some of the other peers of theirs that we were talking about before, the male rappers. I couldn't have seen myself having an
It's interesting, though, because that era that they came out, that they arrived in, sort of 85, 86, is a kind of period where hip-hop seems to change. And prior to that, hip-hop is basically party music. I mean, or certainly the majority of it that you hear. Around 85, 86, you start getting KRS-One, Public Enemy, and that kind of thing, which shifts it into a more sort of social realist thing. And it's interesting that they felt that they suffered a little bit at the hands of that kind of shift, because obviously, you know, in the era of whatever, the Sugar Hill Gang or you know what I mean, or Houdini or all those people being big, that wouldn't have been so much of an issue, their popness of their output, I don't think. Were you a Salt-N-Pepa fan?
I think it's great pop music, I really do. I mean, in a way, it's such great pop music that it's even not really hip-hop or anything.
Yeah,
it's just,
no,
it just
I agree.
Happens to be hip-hop culturally.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing is, if you look at the kind of early sort of 80s hip-hop, there was much more ability for people to kind of be different. So you did have those, I mean, even earlier than that, you had the kind of Roxanne, Roxanne Shantae and all that stuff. But again, even then, there's a blueprint there, which is you still seeing being resonated in the kind of everyday girl, the kind of tomboyish girl. Mm. But what you have now with hip-hop is so rampantly commercial that it's not even really a question of gender anymore, I don't think. You couldn't even really ask about women in hip-hop. It's like the kind of formulaic percentage of artists who are allowed through who are X, Y, and Z. And I don't really think that, you know, people like Nicki Minaj, for example, are even necessarily women. They're just like kind of cartoon semi-humans designed to kind of extricate maximum
Bloody hell,
money.
Nicki Minaj, Jesus.
But, you know,
poor woman.
I have to say, I quite like some of her tunes. There's that track she did, The Warning, like her on the phone having a go at someone who's messing with her man, you know, and some of her beats are good. But again, talking about that UK influence, she's produced by that guy who came out of Thames University and has now been hired to produce loads of people. Who is it? Her, there's Rihanna, all sorts of people.
The track that we played by her last week, I thought sounded a lot like MIA. Mm. Not her rapping particularly, her flow, as I believe you call it. But the actual sort of backing sounded like it could have been an MIA record, which is sort of interesting. You know,
it's all about the cross-cultural exchange.
It is, yeah,
triple
absolutely.
Exchange,
triple exchange, thank you. Yes, excellent. So, yeah, Salt-N-Pepa, they're currently back in the studio, which is good news.
I guess. Yeah, no, I'm sure. I didn't
know
that.
Fair exactly.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if that's good news, actually. I think something should just be left. Maybe she's got, like, an interesting book to write or painting to paint.
Well, I'm just thinking about Salt
and, you say that,
and the belief and the, what Salt's into. And are we going to get a sort of MC Hammer-type preaching situation?
Pillar of Salt. you say that, but my favourite rapper of all time is Slick Rick. I love Slick Rick. I find it really sad that Slick Rick isn't making records on a regular basis anymore. And it's just, maybe, you know, like the sort of relationship you have with Salt-N-Pepa. Mm. I just love the sound of his voice. He's got an amazing, sly, sneaky kind of voice. And it's just not heard very often these days. I believe he's actually a landlord in Brooklyn now.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I think maybe I was wrong there. You know, there's always this kind of slight tendency just to think on the kind of youthful side of someone's career.
Sure.
But actually, people can do really interesting things later in their career. If you look at sort of Johnny Cash or someone.
Yeah, why
should
that
be bringing back
to,
our
yeah.
kind of old school hip hop artists and pairing them up with some crazy producer and encouraging them to do something different.
Yeah, I think that'd be a really good thing because, yes, hip hop more than anything else, you know, it is the genre in which, you know, at one point the ultimate accolade, the ultimate sort of positive adjective you could use is fresh. And so it's obviously, you know, predicated on newness all the time. But it would be interesting to hear, it's such a verbal art form, you know, an older person, someone in their 40s talking about their life experiences, blah, blah, blah. Any Slick Rick fans out there who haven't heard it, sort of talking about his life experiences. The track he did with Morcheeba, of all people, Women Lose Weight, can't recommend it highly enough.
Wow.
A story about a man whose wife gets too fat so he kills her. Slick Rick doing his bit there for feminist empowerment once more. But, Salt-N-Pepa are currently back in the studio. They've got an album penned for 2011.
I am excited about that. I feel bad now. I was very surprised to hear
I'd rather hear
what they've got to say now about their life experiences a bit later in life, for sure.
You can check out myspace.com/Salt-N-Pepa forever or one word for more detail. No Singles Club this week, because we've got three interviews to get through, but let's have some feedback from last week's Singles Club. In keeping with Nicki Minaj, we're going to talk about her again. SV80 writes, Nicki Minaj is terrific. Yeah, stitch that, you see. There's a brightness to her style and a humour to her lyrics that seems to owe as much to Soca and Chutney. What is Chutney? You're going to know this, Emma.
No, you mean as opposed to the condiment.
Do you think that a lot of her lyrics are influenced by Chutney? Branston? I mean, what?
I'm afraid no, that's one's well over my head.
Chutney. Anybody who knows what chutney is, not, you know, not like Piccalilli style chutney, although we all love that, and what the influence it might have on Nicki Minaj's thing, please get in touch, because none of us know what it is. Anyway, apparently her lyrics are as much to soca and chutney as it does to hip-hop. Massive Attack sounds much closer to Wheezy, by which he means Lil Wayne, than Lil Kim or Missy. She has the same ability to conjure up something that sounds like a stream of consciousness almost, but is packed with clever, brilliantly delivered wordplay. I'm getting evils. I mean, yeah. I can only describe that look as filthy, that you just...
I guess the point I was trying to make in the Salt and Pepper interview is that when I listen to some of these rappers, it's all about how terrific they are and various clever ways of saying it. And when I was into it, you know, and of course we've already established it was pop music and not necessarily, you know, straight from the street hip-hop, but it was about something else and something bigger. I mean, even Roxanne Shanto, who we were talking about before, she got it stipulated in her record contract that her label had to pay for her education from then on, wow, no matter what happened. And she obviously wasn't a huge commercial success, but she got to go to college. And it's that kind of attitude I find so much more interesting.
That's what you're going to be going back to grime, because that's what Chipmunk's all about, isn't it? Do your A-levels and then have Unborn Records.
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Maybe do it at the same time.
Absolutely.
God, I'm really preachy today, aren't I?
R.G. Scott writes on the subject of the original version of I Believe in Miracles, which we played last week. Alexis, you like to flaunt your age, don't you? Nothing could be further from the truth, I assure you. I'd like to cover up my age, if possible. You've surpassed yourself this week with Mark Capani. I would just like to say that I wasn't actually alive when Mark Capani's original version of I Believe in Miracles came out. I only came to the Jackson Sisters version with the Basement Jack's Red Alert remix, which is brilliant. If you haven't heard it, I love both of these a lot. This is a lovely addition to those versions. Smooth. Cheers. Cheers to you too, RG Scott. LaGaffe wrote, I personally think the new LCD sound system record is horrifically disappointing. If James Murphy is going out like this, it's an absolute shame. He has clearly run out of ideas and lyrics. Only three good songs from the album. I don't know if you're actually allowed to discuss the album in this kind of detail. I think that you sign these contracts with EMI.
Yeah.
But anyway, go on, let's go for it. We're on the edge of legality here, but the opening track, Dance Yourself Clean, the sixth track that Rosie mentioned, which is called You Wanted a Hit, and the last song on the album, Home. The rest of the album is garbage. And moving on from Singles Club to our Paramore interview and chat, Ellie Moose wrote, I remember at 14 years old righteously surviving on a strict diet of, quote, nothing lighter than Muse, and between mosh pits and discovering breasts, extensively discussing which of Kurt Cobain and Wednesday 13 was the best songwriter. It's Kurt Cobain, fairly obviously. I really agree with this very important point that Ellie Moose is about to make. People who were force-fed classic albums by music snob parents and older siblings really miss out. The bizarre world of teenage fandom is something that can never catch up on later. That's really, really
agreed.
True. P.S.
And they were sober.
What? No, what? And what?
I was going to say, and they were sober when they said it.
And they were sober when they said it. P.S. All certified sober truth, she says. I'd just like to ask you one on the subject of people who wrote in. You know the woman that wrote in, or bloke that wrote in last week, going about, I saw Tongues' collaboration with Thingy at Glastonbury and it was amazing. And
is this person.
Is
the
it?
Same person.
Well, Ellie Moose, I'd just like to point out, love, I don't know, you said it might have been herbally influenced. I don't know how herbally influenced you were at Glastonbury. Tongue didn't play with Tanara when at Glastonbury. Tanara when played at Glastonbury. I don't even know if Tongue did. That didn't actually happen.
Oh, really?
You dreamt it. More great comments this week. Thank you very much. Keep them coming, please, at guardian.co.uk/amusicweekly. Tonight on Radio 1 sees the 500th performance on The Essential Mix. Since 1993, the show has featured two-hour mixes from bands, DJs and artists of the moment. The Essential Mix is seen, in some quarters at least, as making a significant contribution to the popularising of dance music in the 90s. People like Portishead, Derek Carter, Daft Punk all played really, really great mixes. You can still find them online if you're interested. Pete Tong has been the host since it began, and I caught up with him earlier to talk about the show's influence in the dance music world.
Radio 1 Essential. Stand by. The next 2 hours, we hand over those turntables to a guy called Gerald.
The feeling was back in the early 90s that Radio 1, I felt, was a little bit out of sync with, you know, a massive strand of what was preoccupying young people in the UK at that time. We, you know, when I arrived on Radio 1 in 91, we'd just gone through the biggest kind of youth culture kind of explosion musical movement since punk, really, with rave and acid house and everything that followed. And so my timing was great to arrive there, maybe even a little late. It wasn't really, you know, that was the only outlet, and so much of this music was in terms of the way to present club music on the radio is never easy. But the mix show format, which was certainly not revolutionary at the time, something that was quite established in kind of major cities in the US. And so, and I used to go to the US all the time and kind of just literally sit in hotel rooms and be bedazzled by some of these mix shows. And just kept badgering them that we needed a format like that, and you needed to be in tune with that. And also, if we were ever going to go out into clubland, my show was on much too early to really reflect what was going on in clubland. Yet if we had a mix show that was going out overnight, it was a show that we could actually then move into a club in a pretty believable way.
Hello, this is Daft Punk speaking. WDPK 83.7, the sound of tomorrow, the music of today, brings you exclusively the Essential Mix.
And also, there was a sense that there just weren't that many outlets for DJs, even quite big name DJs, to get across to an audience that maybe weren't going clubbing regularly.
Yeah, without a doubt, the kind of stars that emerged from that period of 88 to kind of 1991 were huge draws on street level. You know, Carl Cox, you know, Paul Oakenfold, Sasha, John Digweed, Danny Rampling, all these people had a major impact on what was going on at ground level. Yeah. And yet it wasn't like they all had hit records that Radio 1 can suddenly go. I mean, if you're an underground band, you know, and you're blowing up, eventually you have a song that's kind of acceptable to the rest of the world and it gets championed. But with DJs, it wasn't the way. The way to really get them across was to actually put them on the radio for 2 hours uninhibited.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did it start expanding its remit to include sort of weirder mixes and mixes that weren't necessarily, you know, squarely aimed at the dance floor?
Obviously, when you get a group like Cold Cut or something come and do the mix show, that is what they do. And there were, you know, they were in the minority, but, you know, once a month, once every 6 week cycle, we'd probably feature someone whose set wasn't really dominated by kind of fourth of the floor kick drum. The other real change was when the kind of the purest element of DJing. I mean, when we started the Essential Mix, and when I did the first one, I did literally stand in a room with two turntables and you mix a set together and someone captures it on a tape machine. Obviously now it's completely different. No one does that anymore. And computers and samplers and all sorts of gadgetry comes into play in terms of you can be more creative. And I think that's the biggest change in terms of the journey of the Essential Mix, is that there were quite a few kind of po' faces about that when people first started doing that, as there were when DJs started playing on CDs instead of vinyl. Mm. But everyone got used to that. And obviously once you've got a program like Ableton Live or Logic involved in terms of you building a mix, the sky's the limit in terms of what you're doing in with tempo changes and mashups. And,
yeah.
You know, and then things like Soul Wax, you know, 7-8 years ago with Radio Soul Wax coming along and doing something that intense, you know, it changes everything. I think David Holmes was the other real standout one for me, well-known kind of techno DJ from Belfast, running some very cool parties, playing regularly with the likes of Andy Weatherall. But his roots were in soul, much of my own actually, in Northern Soul and kind of jazz funk and stuff like that. And he put together this really eclectic collection of records that blew people away as well, because he played new and he played old and he presented it in a very kind of contemporary manner for the time, with scratching and stuff like that, you know. So that really excited people. And I kind of re-interviewed him last week, and he kind of, and what he did on that show did have a direct line to Steven Soderbergh ending up hiring him to be the music supervisor on the Ocean film.
Wow, that's amazing. That's fantastic. Yeah. So what, I mean, we live in a different era, as we've established now, you know, when there's a lot of DJ mixes available on the internet. What's the appeal of the Essential Mix, do you think, still? Why does it still go on?
Anything that can be left on the radio for that long, if it's quality and it keeps getting revered in its core kind of audience, you know, after 10 years, there is a feeling of, you know, it becomes a little bit legendary, you know. And then it's a kind of benchmark, I suppose, as in terms of development of DJs. And that's the way a lot of people see it, I think, now, that I very much see that. I mean, we have a lot of fun putting the show together, but it's actually not that hard to pick the people to do it, because, you know, you've always got this pool of people who are kind of getting very close to kind of earning the right to do it. The final thing I would say is, you know, BBC aren't particularly happy with it, but I don't think there is a more bootlegged radio show in the world.
Wow.
And there's got to be something said for that. You know, over the years, there's been literally certainly thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of websites dedicated to the content and tracking the content and tracking the track listings and making the mixes available illegally. As much as PPL and PRS and all the societies, and it's not particularly fair, but that's how that tells you you've got something that people want.
He's the one that thought he was going to be the 20th bomber. He thought he could hide, but he forgot the greatest nation on the face of the earth is after him, one person at a time.
That was Pete Tong, host of The Essential Mix, talking to me earlier today. DJs in the underground scene, are they interested in getting an Essential Mix, do you think?
I have no idea whether DJs are interested in being on there or not, but I would say there was definitely a period in the 90s where it meant something, it was relevant, it was massive. I don't think I've listened to it since about maybe 1998, 1999. But the stuff it did then was really genuine, influential and really, really good. I think I still have a copy of the Air Essential Mix on cassette in my car.
That's really good. They play is it In Your House by The Cure and stuff like that on it. Yeah, yeah.
Really fantastic. So, I mean, in a way, it was those oddball ones that were more interesting.
Definitely.
I think what it did was totally great. I mean, I, again, in a way, Pete Tong and the Essential Mix is a bit like Tim Westwood, but the difference with Westwood is that he's still completely down with what's happening now. So he does his, like, Sunday night grime freestyles. You can't imagine Pete Tong kind of being connected with what's coming up in quite the same way.
No.
Although they had a Brakus on Sistema on a couple of weeks ago, Fortet a few weeks before that. But it does seem to be still the same people that were kind of around in the 90s, and I don't think that's terribly interesting.
Is that what it is? You're still getting a lot of Oakenfold?
Yeah, it's like audio. Well, it's not so much that stuff. It's more like who they had recently, Audio Bullies, Faithless, Ferry Corsten. Yeah, absolutely. So, but again, you know, maybe, I don't know, perhaps they've just got an audience that's growing older with it, who knows?
Yeah, because I mean, maybe it's an audience that's stopped clubbing due to their advanced years or something like that, and is still looking to hear.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, with this stuff, what does it mean? What's it there for? I don't really know. I think the kind of mantle has been taken on elsewhere. Now, it's interesting what he said about no one does it like that anymore, no one does mixes live, but I actually think that's not true.
Really?
Yeah, if you look at things like the Fabric compilations, which, well, they have the podcasts as well, I'm pretty sure the Casper and Roscoe one they did live. I think the Martin one as well might have been done live.
Okay.
And definitely kind of at some of those fresher scenes, people are really, really keen to do stuff live. You know, some of those DJs on that kind of, you know, sort of, I suppose, yeah, dubstep, post-dubstep, whatever, UK bass scene, incredible DJs. They're playing out live using vinyl often. Well, some of them are.
Really?
It's pretty much half and half, yeah.
Because, I mean, about a year ago, Norman Cook told me, and I mean, that's obviously a different kind of DJ, that he was basically the only DJ that he knew that
maybe
still
in
used
his
vinyl
scene.
In his scene. Yeah.
Certainly, if you're going out and seeing people, it is a bit of a mixture. Some people are on Serato, people like Martin are on Serato. DJ Zinc, who's reinvented himself as this kind of crack house DJ, who's actually a fantastic DJ, he uses Serato. But Scream, Benga, Digital Mystics, all those guys all use vinyl.
Wow. Okay.
And they're really amazing DJs. So if you find some of their podcasts or their mixes online, some of them will be live, some of them won't. Someone sent me a really good one by this guy called One Man the other day, who's like this brilliant sort of DJ who came through playing loads of old school garage but has reinvented himself, or not reinvented, really just kind of moved on, plays amazing records, fantastic DJ, and I'd much rather listen to him than the Essential Mix, really.
If you want to hear the Essential Mix, the 500th,
you know, respect to Pete Tong for what he's done, obviously.
If you want to hear the 500th performer to appear on the Essential Mix, tune into Radio 1 at 1 a.m. tonight. That's Friday. The as yet unrevealed DJ will be playing alongside Sasha, Richie Horton and Pete Tong at a celebration at Club Circus in Liverpool. We've sadly come to the end of this week's show. Emma Warren, many thank yous for coming in.
My pleasure. Although I may say that haltingly because my phone's been going off loads, and so I really do apologise.
No, God, never apologise, never explain, Emma. Rosie, nice one, lovely to see you as ever. Pleasure.
Nice one.
Never
always,
a chore.
Always a pleasure, never a chore.
Absolutely. Thanks to producer Pete, as ever. I'm Alexis Petridis. We'll see you next time.